This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Just a little bit of my background. What you see here comes from my 11 years at Shalom Mennonite School. We started with 49 students, I think, in the first year, and there were five full-time staff. And so I left last year. We had 150-some students and 16 staff. That included classroom teacher for every classroom and two teachers in the resource room. And so it was a lot more complex than when I first started. So I kind of evolved over the years from being the 7th and 8th grade teacher to being the administrator of something of a large school. So I suspect some of what you see here this morning will have that large school effect on you. On the other hand, or it's going to look large school, so to speak, and may not apply to you if you're in a smaller school. On the other hand, I think most of our schools have the typical rhythms that we go through, like PTF and parent-teacher conference and some of those types of things. My intent here today is not to go over all of this in detail. My intent is to talk about a certain portion of your role as an administrator or principal, give you a few tools, outlines to work off of. If any of you want this handout or any of these documents that are printed here, I don't mind at all to email them to you, and you can take them and modify them, use them however you want to. The idea for this workshop came from some of my current work. I currently work for Stewardship Resources, which is a wing of Anabaptist Financial. And so we started creating business. What did we create? We call them business toolboxes. Sorry, business management toolboxes. I'm missing that word. Business management toolboxes. And so it's basically a bunch of files. So the HR toolbox would have, you know, employee applications, employee evaluations, employee feedback forms, just a collection of files that we assume people will take and modify for their business setting and use otherwise. So that's kind of the background here for the administrator toolbox. Share ideas with you, files, things that you can take and use. Now, since my computer has to be back there, I lost my notes, so I'll do my best from memory because some of my notes are on the PowerPoint. First of all, we want to look at the administrator's responsibility and task list. It identifies what you are to do and who is involved. And so that is the first part of the outline here. This was helpful for me as I looked at my responsibilities and whether I could sustain what I was doing in terms of church involvement and school involvement. And I had a job description, which looks very different than this. And so I was going through a process of understanding whether I could sustain what was necessary for my family, for being an ordained person at church, and for running the school there as well. And so what really helped me was the task column here. And I know you can't read this here, but the third column. So the first column would be authority or direct responsibility. Who am I in constant contact with or have constant responsibility for? And that was the 10 classroom teachers, the one secretary. If you flip over to the next page, then it gets a lot more complicated with the resource room had its own supervisor, and resource room teachers were under that supervisor and on down through. So that's the authority, direct responsibility. The indirect responsibility, back to the first page there, would be people like the teacher's aide and the classroom moms. I knew they existed, but I wasn't, I would tell the teacher, this is the teacher's aide. This is how much time you have with the teacher's aide. These are the kinds of things they should do for you, but really they're under your direction. You tell the teacher's aide what to do. So I wasn't directly responsible for the teacher's aide, nor the classroom moms. And then all of the little things that need to be done on a monthly basis, things like the newsletter, the financial aspect. So they are listed there with the person who they were. You know, I had to coordinate with the secretary concerning the newsletter, the financial aspect, the yearbook committee, the hot lunch committee, and the classroom moms. You know, however I could, I would work those responsibilities or those tasks through the secretary. And then the third column there is the tasks involved. So what did I actually have to do to get this task accomplished? And certainly we don't have time to go over all of this. And then the fourth column there is the time involved. So what does that actually mean for my schedule? And of course, which you will understand and recognize this, the idea that you're supposed to see every detail yet see the whole school picture from both the board and the staff perspective, okay? It's impossible, okay? It's not humanly possible to do that, but I think it should be the goal of any vigilant administrator to fill that role well. And so we do want to talk about a few cycles or circles here. The first one is your interaction with the school board and the staff. And so I chose four words in this cycle. You're going to communicate, represent, inform, and report. You're going to do this. It's not something you do just once and done. You do this continuously, back and forth. For sure, it happens once a month at board meeting. I would suggest that from the board to staff, it is more represent and inform. It's more you're telling the staff what the board is talking about, what the board is thinking. You're representing the direction that the board wants to take for the school. You're informing the staff of decisions that were made by the board. And, I guess there is airflow in the building. You can prop it open if you want. And then from staff to board, it would be more report and communicate. So the board wants to hear from the staff. What are the issues that the staff is facing? Report to the board, communicate to the board. What is the staff thinking? What are the issues? What are the challenges? What about that problem student in sixth grade? How's that going? And so in this cycle, just trying to identify our place here. Okay, any questions on this before we move on? We're not going to take a lot of time as we move down through here. Okay. Delegation and staff involvement, that is it's the first landscape page in your handout. Delegation and staff involvement. The idea here is to think about your staff, and it's delegation, but it's also a process, I think. Thinking about your newer staff and your more seasoned staff, it's moving them across this chart. And so you're going to have your newer staff are going to be more in that direct relationship. They're going to need more from you. And then you move maybe into a coaching relationship, a supporting relationship, and if they're capable and able, you may actually rewrite their job description and give them more responsibility and more or less turn them loose. One of the big things, okay, I should stick with what I'm doing here. What level of delegation are your staff at now? Are they at the direct level where you're highly involved? Are they at the coaching level where you give them a few tips, feedback, and say, go do it, and then you watch and observe and make sure they're doing it well? Are they at the support level where they've crossed that bridge of trust and the ball is mostly in their court? Or are they at the report level where you've turned complete projects over to them and it's up to them and you're simply assessing the results of the things that they are responsible to do? And at what level of delegation do you want them to be? Just because you might have a capable staff member, if they don't want to move on, if they always want you to prod them and coach them and be there for them, I suppose you have to do that. But ideally, you can move them along and encourage them to get farther down the road in terms of delegation to take more off of your plate. And maybe most important, have you explained this to them? So what I'm trying to do here with this chart is just help us to understand that there are different levels of delegation. And so just for the honest confession, I'm not good at delegation. I like to think about one thing at a time, just like John, and make sure it's all taken care of and then move on to the next task. And so I'm not very quick to pass on responsibility. And I tend to, you know, stay with it and meddle with it and think about it maybe longer than I should. And so have you explained this to them? Does your staff understand that you understand, or have you conveyed to them that there are different levels of delegation and I see you as the first grade teacher, you are at this level of delegation and this is what it means. So we're going to go over this little bit at a time. The left side of the chart, direct and coach, is high leader involvement. You're involved quite a bit. You're taking the initiative and ownership. If something goes wrong at this level, you're the one responsible because you didn't give them the correct coaching or direction or leadership. After you cross that bridge of trust, it's the follower, it's the teacher, it's your fellow staff member who takes more initiative and ownership, and they have more involvement in owning what they are doing. On the bottom here, we have the left side tends to be newer staff. The right side would tend to be your more seasoned staff. Now, we're just going to go over this one at a time. The level of direct here is to establish expectations. And so identifying their role clearly, what you are to do. This is orientation before school. So we're thinking about this in terms of delegation, but we're also thinking about this in terms of, it's kind of like a school year as well, especially if you have high teacher turnover. The direct aspect here, or the first level of delegation, is going to exist all the time as you have new staff members coming on board. And so down here in the bottom, your administrative task is to make sure that they have a job description, make sure that after the board has hired them, they do know what they are supposed to do, okay? A job description I see has two purposes. The one is training, that you can sit down with that teacher and their job description and go over the job description and say, this is what is expected of you in the classroom this year. When you've communicated what is expected, you have a way to come back and then evaluate. And it seems my observation is that when it comes to evaluation, we're just kind of ad hoc. We pop in the classroom, look around, you know, no one's jumping up and down or making too much noise, and so everything's going good. And maybe we don't even sit down with the teacher and review. But here's a way for you to be very specific about evaluation and think about that as you're writing the job description. Make the job description in a way that you can evaluate it, that you can come back to it and say, make it qualitative, so to speak, that you can go back to the job description and say, now we're going to evaluate based on what I told you to do, how I trained you. Now I'm going to say how I think you're doing in all of these areas. Faculty handbook, the purposes here would be clarity and expectations. This may be a lower need in a smaller school, but after, as our school was growing, I just found it wearisome to be communicating the same things over and over and over and over again, year after year after year, because inevitably we would have new staff because of growth or teacher turnover. And so a faculty handbook was in, there's one on the Doc for Learning. Sorry, that did not show up very well. But the Doc for Learning has the faculty handbook that I created for Shalom, and you can go there and grab that if you want. So it's clarity and it's expectations. You're the new staff member. Here's the faculty handbook. This is what I've been telling the staff for the next, for the last 10 years. This is what I expect of you. And my goal in the faculty handbook was, when they come and they ask you, they have their list of 10 questions, you know, you can kind of see, and you know, they have their sticky note pad or whatever, and you know that the first three pages are questions for you. My goal was to get to the place where I would say, well, did you read the faculty handbook? And actually not answer their question, okay? Here's the faculty handbook. You read all of this. And then when they come, they have informed questions. They have questions about what you have written in the faculty handbook. And your discussion is much more valuable at that point. And so this is just a shot of the table of contents in our faculty handbook. It was a growing document. It's not like the board sat down and said, this is the faculty handbook. I would throw forms in there if teachers needed to give a student a disciplinary action form. It was, the faculty handbook was laying right beside the copier. They pull it out of the notebook, put it on the copier, copy what they needed. Field trip request forms. The first one there is a message from the board about teacher lifestyle. So the board wanted to communicate, make sure that something gets communicated to all staff. Where are you going to do that? Well, they decided to do it here in the faculty handbook. So this was a growing document. You're not going to need nearly everything in here, but you may need to add some things, but I found it very helpful to have this as it's the answer to all of the anticipated questions. And if you're in administration for any length of time, you'll have a growing pile of things that you'll want to put in your faculty handbook. Any questions on this before we move on? Maybe your faculty handbook is part of your student handbook. Maybe you have combined documents. Does anyone have a faculty handbook that you give to staff? Okay, so half of you already have it, and you may find other ideas here. Okay. Required reading. Identify topics that you want all your staff to read about. And so I had a few pet things that I wanted to promote as the administrator, and I would force them to read certain sections out of certain books, and I would have a deadline. You need to have this read by such and such a date, and would try to follow up and make sure that they did that. I did find out with required reading, I used to make them do it all before school started, and I reneged on that commitment, because what I found is that when that first grade teacher, second grade teacher got into the school year and I forced them to read a certain section about reading out of Teach Like a Champion, they could connect with that because they were actually in the classroom and they were experiencing the challenge right at the moment. So a lot of the required reading I had them do by the end of second semester, by the middle of the school year. And the required reading was part of the new staff information letter, which, if you don't have a lot of teacher turnover, that may not be worth it. But, you know, what is required of you to get that new staff member on board? You know, they need this. They need their tax forms. And so just compile all that into a list, a checklist, and communicate that to them ahead of time. Teacher training events, identify for them What are the events that you want them to go to grow them as a teacher? Possibly visiting other schools. If you know of a teacher in a similar school close by that has a lot of respect in your community, sending your teacher there to observe and just see how this other person runs their classroom may be the best training that they can get. Or maybe it's mentoring by another teacher in-house. So thinking about the delegation here in terms of directing that teacher, you might not have the best advice for the first grade teacher. I love the younger grades. I love the kindergarten, first, second grade level, but I could never be that teacher. Okay, I would never have the patience to do what they do. And so connecting a new teacher with a teacher in a similar grade level can be very helpful. They may be able to give direction that you as an administrator will never be able to give. Okay, the second level, someone gonna ask a question. Okay, second level is coaching. You're building confidence here. You give direct feedback concerning performance. This is how you are to do it. You model for them what you want done. This is training on the job. This is after school starts. This is you popping in and out of their classroom, observing, seeing how things are going. Classroom observation, I found it helpful. A new teacher especially will probably be gun shy of the administrator coming and sitting in the back with your clipboard and your paper, and you're going to do an evaluation. I would suggest you really don't do that in the first quarter of the school year at least. Okay, they'll be much more comfortable if you step into the classroom for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, just see how things are going. Maybe it's even walking by and looking in the window until the teacher knows that you've been watching, they catch your eye. They have a sense that you are on their team, okay, that you're not there watching them for mistakes. You are there watching them to see what coaching they need, what else they need to improve in their classroom. If you can't do that during the school day, do it after school. So a regular how's it going visit by the principal after school, what is on their mind at the end of the day is usually the highlight of the day. Sometimes my wife will ask me at the end of the day, what did you do today? And I actually didn't know. Like, I couldn't really think about what did I actually accomplish. I think I did something, but it was so fragmented and in all different directions, I can't think of one thing. Same thing for the teacher. They're not going to remember everything from that day, but the thing that's sticking in their mind at the end of the day is probably the most important or the most impacting thing for them. And so it is important for you to pay attention to that. If you have teachers coming from out of the area teaching at your school, this can be very critical, because if you have a group of local teachers who know each other, you introduce one or two staff members from out of the area, and all of those people are out there in the front hallway, and they kind of know them a little bit yet, but they don't really know them, and not to mention they're acting a little bit funny, and they're just not quite sure if they're, if they should be in that circle. That's when you should be, all the staff that are seasoned staff doing the things that they do in the front hallway after school, okay, they'll be fine. If there's teachers sitting in their classroom alone trying to process the day, that's a teacher that you should be paying attention to. Use experienced teachers to help coach the new teachers. And so many times in a conversation with a teacher, what about this, what about that? You just have to be willing to say, you know what, Miss so-and-so is going to have a better answer than I do. Admit that, you know what, I'm ignorant in this area, but I have this other trusted teacher. I'm going to tell her that you're going to come and have these questions. And then when it's convenient for you, you go and talk to that teacher, and they'll make those connections. Okay, so from level two to level three delegation here, we're crossing the bridge of trust, where you're in a sense turning over responsibility. You're saying your training, coaching is complete, and now it's yours to take. You're there to support. You're there to encourage and empower. They're going to carry out their role outside of direct supervision. You know, the daily operations are theirs. And in a sense, they are right from the beginning, because you're not hovering around the classroom every day. But I think it's important for them to understand that they have come to a place where you trust them. Okay, you might not have to explain the levels of delegation here, but you've come to a place of trust. You like what's happening in their classroom, and you are there to encourage and empower them to make better things happen in their classroom. They're a contributor to the team. They offer suggestions. They're able to take risks. So down here under supporting, you support the follower, you take their suggestions, and maybe there's something that they want to try. You don't know how it's going to work, and they don't know how it's going to work. That's probably the acid test of whether or not they've crossed the bridge of trust, okay? Maybe they brought an idea from another school, and it's a new idea for your school. Can they try this, that, or the other thing in their classroom? And if they have, if they're at this level three support on the delegation scale, hopefully you can say yes, you know, go for it. I would like you to try that in your classroom and then report back to me, let me know how it went, and then I will decide if we use that method in other classrooms or how that should impact the way we're teaching, you know, first grade phonics or whatever it is. Compliment work, that's from your perspective. Pass on praise from parent observations. I think that's very important. You know, parents, especially in a large school, they couldn't get to meet every teacher, every PTF. We tried to make that happen as much as possible because parents had to go to every room to get the report cards. But it's just not possible for a teacher to talk to 20 parents in one evening. And so when you hear praise about a specific classroom from patrons, that praise is not yours. That deserves to be passed on. And so you hear a lot of things when parents are there at PTF. It's critical. PTF, parent-teacher conference, are very critical. But don't just absorb that praise and pat yourself on the back. That deserves to be passed on. And that's part of this level of delegation. And especially if a parent is praising something that's happening in fifth grade or whatever it is, and you have a staff member at this level on the delegation scale, you can step back and say, you know what, that was their idea in the first place, and I really like how it's going too. Okay, don't absorb it yourself. Let parents know that you have put that teacher out there and that you have this trusting relationship, and you've given them leeway to try some of those maybe new things. Praise and build confidence. Acknowledge that they are needed to accomplish things at school that you will never accomplish. And so a school staff is really a team. And I think I can say in all of my years, we experienced a good working team. Now, a team of five is much different than a team of 16. And so staff meeting got more and more complex as the staff grew. And so we had to think about that a little bit. But teachers at this level need to know that their contribution is needed, because you are not going to accomplish everything that should be accomplished at school. Now, at this juncture in the road, you've crossed the bridge of trust coming left to right, coming this way, and you have taken the step saying, I feel like you're well trained, I coached you, you have what it takes, you know what's expected. And so you've crossed the bridge of trust coming this way, and it comes time for evaluation. How do you do that? Well, evaluate based on the job description. Go all the way back to the beginning and say, this is your job description. This is what I told you to do. And this is how I trained you. And go back to that job description for evaluation. And I put a job description in here. It's actually specific to third and fourth grade teacher, although they're all basically the same. And then the next page is a teacher evaluation based on the job description. So the job description aligns with the evaluation, but it's not possible, I don't think, to evaluate every point of the job description. Okay? So in using this, I would just look at the first six main points here. Okay, so qualifications. We believe that the teacher should be able to accomplish the following. Be a godly role model. So that gives you talking points for evaluating how the students perceive the teacher. Okay, is this teacher fulfilling this responsibility of being a godly role model? One of my favorite verses is Luke, in terms of education, is Luke 6:40, which essentially says the student will be like his teacher. And so if the teacher in the classroom is not, they might be the greatest teacher in the world, but if they're not the appropriate role model, then you have some work to do. Okay, so role model. Letter B, maintain a central and authoritative presence in the classroom. You know, how is that going? Use that as a talking point. Letter C, maintain a warm and friendly classroom atmosphere. So maybe you come across a situation where a teacher has different expectations than what the school does in terms of what my classroom should look like. So they came from another school maybe, or another area, another community, and in that community, the classroom looked like this. They come to your school and they try to implant that classroom culture into your school, and it doesn't work. The students are not expecting that. They're not used to that way of doing things. And so, you know, this is one where we did have to come back and do some evaluation. You know, this is what we want in your classroom. We want this kind of atmosphere. And that's kind of like predicting the weather, right? Atmosphere. You know, what are you actually talking about when you're talking to the teacher about, you know, well, your students are feeling this. What are you hearing from parents? Students are coming to school stressed out. They're not sure what to expect. They feel like, you know, you're being too harsh with them or whatever that may be. Or the other side of that is the classroom's in chaos because the teacher doesn't have the authoritative presence, and the children are running the classroom. Okay, so job description and evaluation, I think it's important to have a link between those two. Now, I'll just pause here. Any comments on that? Or maybe someone here already has done that and you have a job description perfectly aligned with an evaluation and you would be willing to share that with the rest of the group. This idea did come from our business management toolbox, okay? Because in the business world, you want to be able to give them the job description, have them do the job, be profitable and productive for you, and you need a way to understand if they're doing what they were told. I don't think it's any different in our realm.
I've got a question, but how do you implement this if you are fairly amateur yourself and you're giving it the administrative role? Mm-hmm. And there's long-term teachers who have been in a lot of these. As far as changing how the culture is there already, So for instance, maybe some teachers tend to always, younger teachers tend to take problems to the other teachers before it's different to the country because we didn't have anything in high school. How would you go about
Yeah, I would make it part of your, part of like a weekly report. I used to do a written report, and then towards the end of my time there, I had enough of time in my day that I actually planned a schedule where I met with every teacher 20 minutes every week, and we'd just sit down face to face. I would take care of it as part of that, so that it's not a threatening kind of thing where you walk in and say, you know, so what have you been talking about with this other teacher? Just make it a routine part of what you do and say, you know, what are you encountering in your classroom? What other teachers have you talked to in the last week? And what are you discussing? Because you'll get the perspective from the first grade teacher, then when you get a second grade teacher, you'll get that perspective, and you'll be able to put that puzzle piece together without, and then you'll be able to engage all of the staff if you see something that you want to tweak in that process. Okay, maybe someone else has better answers to that question. I do think it's important for the administrator to own the atmosphere, the environment, the culture of the school. But to act like you know how to teach first grade phonics, don't do that. They'll know better.
In response to this question, I'm just still in my third year teaching. Mm-hmm. I'm a small school, only three teachers, including myself. Mm-hmm. It's something I discovered, before chairman came to me and addressed the issue. Was that I was not communicating with my fellow teachers. I didn't really know what was happening. And all that I changed was simply having a weekly meeting and sitting down and talking about what's happening. And that's, I still need to improve on that, but that just having one afternoon a week, giving a chance for some talking, instead of just the other two teachers talking and getting frustrated with what was going on, they could talk to me as well. And more just like in a scheduled meeting. That really helps.
Yes, it's a lot easier to talk in a scheduled meeting. They may be talking without you there for a reason. They may actually be scared to come. Depending on their personality or whatever, so they're going to solve it, or they're just being really nice. They don't want to bother you because you're so busy. So just because they don't come doesn't mean they don't want your input.
Another question, hop a little bit, but so if I understand it, you were an administrator and not a regular classroom teacher for quite a few years. Is that right?
Yeah, the last 5 or so, I was not a homeroom teacher.
Because what I face is, if I see a teacher, not a fellow teacher, need guidance in something, in direction, a new teacher, it's hard to go to them, especially when you're teaching the grade right next to them. And for me, in unique situations, teaching grade 1 and 2, so all the grades, like every teacher I talk with, I heard my former students, and I know how they were doing, I know what their grades previously were, how they were doing. How do you help a teacher, especially if you see your students are starting to fail in some areas, how do you go to them with everything that looks like I had it all together and it's their fault because they were passing my grade and I had them? If I was an administrator only, it'd be a lot easier to go and talk, but it's hard to divide that and separate those two.
And in your case, it's because you teach a young, you're in an administrative role, but you're teaching young students, and then they go on beyond you. It usually works the other way. You know, when they're in 7th or 8th grade, we just blame them down the line.
We talk about it later, too.
Yeah, that is a very unique situation for you. So I don't have an experienced answer there, because I was always the eighth grade teacher, and I kind of knew what I was getting in terms of students because I watched them grow up. Yeah, we can maybe chat later on that one.
I think it comes back to what you just said about not needing to know how to teach phonics better than your first grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That logic works in reverse. So if your high school teacher is struggling, you need to offer him the same resources. We need to find someone who's smarter than I am, who's better, more experienced than you are, and three of us work together to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at that level, if it's a content issue, maybe they don't have the content that they should, you may actually have to reach outside the school to get the training that they need. And again, in all of this, if you don't have to take a complicated delegation chart, but just for them to understand and realize that you see four levels of delegation, for them to understand at what level of delegation they are at is helpful. Because if they're at the first level of delegation, basically you're saying everything needs to be filtered through me. Before you even go and talk to that other teacher, I want you to ask me the questions that you're going to ask to that teacher. And you might say, no, don't go and talk to the kindergarten teacher, talk to the second grade teacher. So just the understanding of where they're at in terms of delegation, I think, is helpful in you and them understanding your relationship. Okay, now some staff will come to this third level and they'll be happy there. They don't want additional responsibility, but some are capable and really should and deserve more responsibility. So the question here is, do we rewrite their job description? Are there things that need to be done here at school that I as the administrator am not capable of doing, that I should literally turn over to someone else? And so for me, that was the volume of struggling students coming through, and we didn't have a resource room for the first 8 years of the school's existence. And so we were able to get a staff member on board who was very capable. And so she had a job description that was that was her domain. Okay, resource room was really her domain. And so she was beyond this, even this support level. She was at the report level, where she was responsible for the resource room teachers. And it was more my job to look at the resource room and get feedback from parents and say, how is the resource room doing? How is that program working? It's more of a big picture assessment of what was going on there. At the report level, there's follower-made decisions. The leader envisions a big picture and delegates to the follower to carry it out. So then, basically, the big picture here was, we need a resource room. There were a few students that highlighted that fact dramatically. And so, you know, that was my responsibility. We need a resource room. How are we going to do this? I can't accomplish this. Found the right people and put them in charge. Collaborate in development of strategic plans. You can forget that. That's business language there, because that came from elsewhere. They have a say. They have say and they have sway. What, you know, their experience, their knowledge, what you're asking them to do, the programs you're asking them to run, are important. And so, in some ways, you're pulling them up almost as an equal to you, because they have responsibility for programs and parts of school that are really theirs to run. So appoint a supervisor of certain tasks, events, or departments. They're better equipped than you to lead in those certain aspects. And then your job is to assess the results of that delegated task, event, or department. So You're assessing the results of what they've done, maybe more than evaluating their performance. You're beyond that. You're trusting that what they're doing, the program that they're running, the thing that they're doing, they know how to do it. They're competent. And so, again, it goes back to this thing. When we got the resource room started, we got lots of wonderful feedback from patrons, and that didn't belong with me. It belonged with the resource room supervisor. And so we heard that was really the way for me to assess what's going on. Was the resource room worth it? Was it worth that extra $40,000 in the budget? Well, when I was hearing from parents, yes, it was worth it. Okay, we come back to another very important circle. So this is back to page, I guess it's the third page. It's the end of the responsibility and task list. So if you feel like you're running in circles as an administrator, you probably are, and that might not be a bad thing. So we have the same circle of communicate, represent, inform, report, and here I'm looking at it in terms of the board and specifically a new staff member. So it may be even this time of the year where the board comes along and, you know, they breathe a sigh of relief. We have all of our teachers hired. You know, it's today, August 1, I think. And so they breathe a sigh of relief, wash their hands, and they're just happy that school's ready to go, okay? And you have a little circle to run here with this new staff member. And I created a new staff information letter, and I included that in here. Dear new SMS staff member, there's the required, some of the things I required of them. Additional resources that I thought would be helpful to them, those were not required. I'm just saying if you're looking for more to, you know, to read up on, or in some cases to watch, here are some things that you could. And then the next page in the middle where the handout is stapled was a checklist of items. This is what it took to get a new staff member on board and just make sure that all of those things were taken care of and who was responsible to take care of them. And there again, a lot of that went to the secretary. Okay, we're going to leave that circle for what I think is maybe a more important one, and that is the administrator's relationship with patrons and students. So again, we have this communicate, represent, inform, report. And in this case, you know, you are responsible, I think, as the administrator. You really are serving in somewhat of a teacher role, and maybe in a lot of our cases, a dual role, your teacher and the administrator. It is your responsibility to represent and inform and tell the students what you believe the parents would expect of them, okay? It's the authority chain again. It comes from board to teachers, but it also comes from parents to students, and it's your responsibility to uphold what the parents would expect in their home and what the church would expect, especially if you're a church school. So that represent and inform, I believe, again, comes more from patrons to students. You need to understand what the patron body wants for their students. The Latin word here is in loco parentis. You are acting in the place of the parent, so you have to know what the parents are expecting here. And then otherwise, report and communicate from students to patrons. If you take the time to communicate to parents about how it's going for Johnny and Sammy and Susie at school, that will be very valuable to them to know that you took the time to notice, okay? And you report and communicate to home. And again, I think that's why PTF, Parent Teacher Conference, is extremely important. And depending on the size of your community, that those opportunities may exist at church and other places like that. Oh, okay, sorry, here's the big picture. And yes, again, I believe it's more represent and inform from patrons down to students, and more report and communicate from students to patrons. One of the things that we did as a school to communicate home was a Monday folder. Every student would take a Monday folder home every week, at least if it was a long week. If it was a short week, we didn't always do it. And just include a sampling of their work, tests and quizzes. Parents can pull it out of the folder, flip through it, see what the actual test and quiz scores were, put it back in the folder, send it back to school on Tuesday. And on the parent end, it can be wearisome, especially when you have four children in school. You look at that every Monday night. On the other hand, I think it's very valuable. I like to be able to pull those, you know, pull my students' work out, my children's work out, and just flip through and see. It takes me 5 minutes to see how they're doing, the grades they got in the previous week. Okay, some practical ideas for parent communication. Patron surveys around PTF. There's a sample in the handout here. One that we used, it's toward the back here. Yeah. And actually, the way we used this patron survey, we sent this home ahead of time, about a month ahead of time. And we gathered patron feedback and we compiled it. And then we went to parent-teacher fellowship. And then we talked about the feedback that we got here and broke patrons up into small groups of about 5-6 families per group. And then talked about the results of the survey so that, number one, they felt pressured to do the survey. Okay, you're going to have to talk about this later, so you should take some time to think about it now. And so we did that twice during my 11 years there. The first time it was a little bit different. Gerald Miller from here has a really good model for PTF. It's kind of like this. And we had followed that the first time and then drew this up the second time. It was based on our handbook. This is what our school says. This is what our school set out to do. The question is, are we actually accomplishing that? And I think we just did this last year or 2 years ago. So it's kind of like the 10-year mark. This is what we said 10 years ago. What's actually happening today? Are we actually doing what we said we're going to do? So I would encourage you to draw up your own, but it's very interesting to gather feedback. When we broke up into small groups at the PTF, we made sure we had a scribe in each group, and then we gathered verbal comments as well and compiled them back in here as well. And so that was very helpful to understand how the patrons are viewing the school. It kind of highlights, you know, the things that the school is doing well. And most patrons aren't going to be too harsh, at least that wasn't my experience, but you kind of get a sense when you have 5 or 10 comments about one particular thing that's not the way patrons would like to see it. You kind of get the sense that, you know, we need to work on that. Okay, that's parent-teacher fellowship. The other thing is meeting with the administrator as part of parent-teacher conference. Once I was not a classroom teacher, I enjoyed that very much. So I would invite them. I wouldn't force them. So they get the parent-teacher conference schedule, and they get a separate note. If you want to meet with Mr. Musser, he wants to talk to you about these two things. And the one was a general question, and the one was a very specific question. Such as, you know, what are your students feeling about school culture? What's your family's view of current school culture? That's a general question. Specific question, what do you think about XYZ math curriculum? Okay. And so I found that very helpful. Almost every patron would take the opportunity and they'd stop by the office and just a good time to hear directly from them how they think things are going. Okay, the last thing here is, well, let's take some time on the parent-teacher conference. That's more important than the last item. Any ideas that you have for parent-teacher fellowship, parent-teacher conference? We tried very much to have PTF be as interactive as possible. So maybe we were non-traditional. We had three PTFs, and at only one of them did we have an outside speaker come in and give a topic. We kind of resisted topics and tried to be more interactive.
Okay. Were parents required to come to
them? We tried not to make it a law-based system. We incentivized them. So we would put report cards out on every student's desk, so they had to literally go to every classroom to pick it up. And then in the earlier years, when I was more fiery about the fact that they had to come, then I'd send them a note, a nice note that we missed them at PTF, and here are your students' report cards. And if you have any questions about the report card, you know, feel free to talk to the teacher, talk to me. And I'm going to say, over the course of our years there, I think we maintained 80% or better, because they saw it as kind of offensive to miss. Not to mention, then their students had to wait until the next Monday folder to get their report cards. So PTFs are Tuesday night, all of their friends got their report card, and they have to wait till next Monday, because that's the next communication coming from school. What often happened, and we had so many churches represented, I'd have patrons calling feeling bad that they're going to go to revivals instead of come to PTF. And I would say, no, you go to your church event, and almost inevitably they would stop in ahead of time and get the report cards and the way to church. I required my teachers to be there early, the hour before, so that any parent would know if they want to meet with a teacher the hour before PTF, it's the parent's prerogative to call the secretary and say, I want to meet with this teacher at 6:15. And then in that half hour before PTF, a lot of parents just came and circulated through. The smart parents would come ahead of time, because they knew that afterwards it's hopeless to talk to the teacher, because certain parents will always get the teacher's attention. Okay, one last thing I just throw out here. This is completely from the business world. In organizational assessment, the Gallup Q12 index is a highly researched employee engagement tool. And so basically what it's saying is employee engagement is directly linked to performance and business outcomes. And that's fairly logical, but I think it's like 30 years of research went into this, and they came out with 12 questions. Okay, so these are the 12 questions that best help you understand how engaged your employees, your staff, feel. So this is completely from out there, the business world, the secular world. And at Stewardship Resources, we're hoping to develop some of this type of work for nonprofits. So currently we develop it for businesses and we sell it to them. If we develop it for nonprofits, my goal is that we would give it to you for free. I think that's the idea. So that's just beginning to develop as we speak. So the organizational assessment, I did put it on the back of your handout here. I was actually surprised that I could find the questions online. When I searched for them a couple months ago, I couldn't find them. And I found them online in a PDF file. So I figured if they're on there and they're We give the credit. I suppose it's fine for me to print them off. So that's what I did. This is the Gallup Q12 index. This is a shot of some of what we're developing at Stewardship Resources. A lot of the same types of things, but it's formatted differently and gives a lot more detail. Of course, when you're Gallup and you put something out there and everyone knows it exists, you can find all kinds of websites like the one here, hacking the Gallup Q12. And so they say, well, you know, there's a question that kind of talks about it. This is kind of the way they say the question. So even if you can't find the actual 12 questions, you can find very similar ones of people who are using it. And it's work that's been out there for quite a while. Okay, any other questions that you have?
I was just wondering, how often do you have PTF? Just once a year?
We had 3 PTFs. Well, we had it at the end of first quarter was PTF, and of second quarter was parent-teacher conference. And so the teacher handed the report card to the parents at parent-teacher conference. And then the end of third quarter was also PTF. At the end of the school year, the report cards went home on the last day of school. And I'm forgetting, we turned patron orientation into a PTF. So we had a PTF like 2 weeks into school, September 6, 7, 8, somewhere in that range, very early in the school year. So 3 PTFs and 1 parent teacher conference.
Whereas engaging with parents, one technique that I've found that I really like is the day that we're having the meeting in the evening, I have my students make something for their parents, or do some chalkboard artwork, or have them all write a note up for their parents. And then this past year, on PTF, I had them all make a little card for their parents and hung them up on the bulletin board.
Okay.
And had to write something that they liked about their parents. And then when the parents came in the evening, they wrote a note to their student. So the children were all excited when they went home. And had to make sure the parents get there and put that note on. Mm-hmm. I think I had that time to go with the parents.
So there you go. Incentivize the parents. They not only get the report card, they come to get the note that the student or card that they created. Good.
Maybe coming into a new school culture, and didn't really have much administrative experience before.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's 5 teachers and five of us are new.
Okay.
What would you prioritize in that situation? Because I'm fairly green with. I taught before for 3 years, but it was 2 teachers or 2 teachers and an aide. So staff communication is very informal.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was really scaled down. The school I'm going to is much bigger than what I used to. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have a lot of official administrative stuff. So I was just wondering what you would prioritize, making sure things flow smoothly. Because I'm coming into a new school culture, so it's not like you talk about, mentoring, and here's how I want you to do this. I'm coming into it, and, I kind of know how to run a classroom, but I don't know how the school culture works and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff like that where I can't really tell. There's going to be at least two new teachers that I haven't talked before a while. So. Mm-hmm. So you have that in the mix as well as a lot of unfamiliar staff.
Yeah, you have a challenge. I'm going to say, if any of you want to go, I'll talk to you however long you want to talk about that, from now till lunch or whenever. But for those of you I guess you all have a place to go, right? You're either experienced or you're new, so you're going to the gym or the chapel. So if you want to leave, go for it. You have 10 minutes to get to your proper place. Oh, I should say, if you want anything and you don't want to go on the dock to get it, I will gladly email you anything that's in the handout here. Fairly simple, lylemusser@gmail.com. I was very fortunate to get that email address. All right, well, thank you. Hopefully you learned something beneficial, and blessings on your school year.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.